Welcome to another episode of Sharing the Hope from the Mike and Mason Foundation. I'm your host, Patrick Mason, and I'm joined today by Lauren Shubbs. Lauren is a heart parent to six-year-old Winston. Winston is 2 years post-Fontan and doing amazingly well. She also has two heart-healthy children, Raya and Annalise. Lauren enjoys spending time with her husband and children riding bikes, going to the beach, tackling projects, and being with friends and family. Lauren has a passion to improve the lives of other heart parents and hopes the future continues to look brighter for heart warriors everywhere. Lauren, thank you for joining us on the show and welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Well, you're very welcome. So I know that was kind of a little bio. I wanted to give you an opportunity if there's anything else you'd like to say before we kick off into questions.
No, I think we'll cover kind of a lot of our story and our journey through the questions here.
All right. Well, the first one I usually ask is, how did you become involved in the world of congenital heart disease? But I have a feeling maybe through your son. So I think the way I'd rather phrase it is, tell us your story.
Our story is actually quite a unique one. So Winston was our first child and we did not find out gender. And our big joke was that we thought that the gender would be the surprise, but really it was his heart defect. Winston was not diagnosed until he was 2 days old, despite having fantastic OB care and even being sent to an MFM for a fetal echocardiogram. The fact that he was missing his left ventricle still went undetected somehow. So we had our 20-week anatomy scan. Our OB was like, something doesn't look right here on the scan. We're going to send you to an MFM. Let me know when you get in. So I call her back later that day. I go, they scheduled us for like 3.5 weeks out. And she's like, hold tight. I will give you a call back. And she calls me back 20 minutes later. She's like, you're going in at 7 a.m. tomorrow. And I told my husband, I was like, something is wrong.
Yeah.
They are trying to get us in fast so we can make a decision here. So we go in and see the MFM who does all the scans and does all the checks and says, and I'll never forget, verbatim says to me, as a new mom, you're going to have enough things to worry about. Your kid's heart isn't one of them. I hope I never have to see you again for future pregnancies. Have a great day. Done. Right? And we're like, I will never forget this guy's line. Yes. And like, I actually ended up calling him out one day and was like, you should really change your party line here.
Good
but yes. So, so then Winston was born and he seemed like a totally fine baby at first. And within about 12 to 18 hours, wasn't eating, was just sleeping, wasn't really moving, was completely lethargic. And we kept telling the nurses, like, something's wrong, something's wrong, something's wrong. Mm-hmm. And they kept saying, look, you know, you're a new mom. Count yourself lucky that he sleeps. He'll eat when he's hungry. Everything's fine. Right. Well, he was born on March 16th. So on the 17th, the hospital did this like promo photo shoot, St. Patrick's Day marketing thing, right? And so my husband took Winston to the nursery and he's like, you get some rest. Like you need to sleep. So at the nursery, another nurse was like, hey, I've heard you guys complaining that you feel like your son is off. I agree. Something looks off. Tell your nurse you want to go to the NICU. She won't refuse you. She'll just send you the NICU. So my husband went back to the nurse and was like, we want to go to the NICU. Sent us to the NICU where they told us that he was likely septic. So they were treating him for sepsis. Mm-hmm. And that clearly was not the case. He ended up crashing and we got transferred down to Lurie's, which is our hospital here in Chicago.
Okay.
And at that point, he was put into a medical coma. And we basically got told, here's your crash course and everything that you should have been knowing the last 20 weeks. And we will do surgery whenever he's stable enough to do surgery. So that is kind of our journey into how we ended up with a heart kid. So a little bit different than the average HLHS kiddo out there for the most part. I know there's other kiddos out there that are in our similar camp, but just a very rough introduction to not only the CHD world, but parenthood in general.
Yeah. We had our healthy kiddo first. Micah was not our first kid, but we didn't find out till day three.
Okay.
And so it was very much one of the NICU nurses. Like me and my wife had both fallen asleep and they came in to check on him the day we were going to check, you know, leave. We woke up and he was in the NICU and we're like, okay.
what's going on here?
Yeah. What happened? What's going on?
Yes. Winston had actually been discharged by his pediatrician, who is no longer our pediatrician. And we were just waiting on the OB to discharge me when everything started to go down. And so at like 10:30 at night, the transport ambulance got there and I went up to my room to get my stuff because I was riding in the ambulance. And the nurse there goes, "I'm sorry, but you haven't discharged. We can't let you go." And I literally looked at her and I go, "Unless you're arresting me right now, I am leaving with my child." And she was like, "I'm going to need you to sign some paperwork." I'm like, "I am verbally telling you, I am walking out the door right now. Either arrest me or don't." My husband was like, "Oh my God, Lauren." I was in such a state of like shock where it's like that, like fight mode where like you just like completely like no emotions, no like actual processing. Like it is just task complete, task complete, task complete in order to survive to the next minute.
Yep. I'm going to do this thing now and then I will do a thing after that. But,
and if you get in my way, it's going to be a problem for you, not me.
That's right. So that was, that was a very rough introduction. So where did things go from there?
Yeah, so we got transferred down to Lurie's, and then I'll never forget, it's like 2 o'clock in the morning and we're sitting in like the lobby floor and this doctor is upside down drawing a normal heart versus my kid's heart and trying to explain it to us after birthing a child, not sleeping for 3 days, and now we are sitting on the floor of a room trying to understand what is happening here. So he ends up somehow making it through that first night, which like everyone has told us after the fact was real touch and go for a few days there. And he had his first surgery, the Norwood, at 8 days old, and ended up really crushing it. Like it was exactly what his body needed. We were out of the hospital about 5 weeks later, which isn't like the fastest out, but given how we got in, like it's a pretty good out. He kind of bounced back and forth, you know, during that interstage life between the hospital and home life and constant cardiac monitoring, obviously. And then he had his Glenn surgery at 5 months old. And then we entered that like weird limbo between Glenn and Fontaine where you kind of just like wait for that shoe to drop, which is a frustrating experience. But then he ended up having his Fontaine in February of 2021. And Fontaine's circulation has done great things for him. He runs, jumps, plays golf, swims, plays baseball, builds robots. Like he's just a super normal 6-year-old in all senses of the word. So we're very lucky with that.
Good deal. Very good deal. So when did you start becoming involved in organizations?
So when my son was first born and we were on the hospital floor, the nurses and the staff kept saying, "Oh, there's like this support group or this organization." And I wanted none of it. We didn't even tell anybody except for like our best friends and our family for about 6 months. I was in complete denial. I was like, they had to have got this wrong. Like, how do I get through all of these scans and all of this pregnancy? And like, then my kid has half a heart. Like, it didn't add up to me. So I was like, we're not going to tell anyone. And my husband's like, we are 2 surgeries in. I'm pretty sure they've got it right at this point. but I was just in like such denial. I didn't want to like connect with anyone. I was so mad at everybody. And then we ended up getting involved a little bit with MPCQIC through our providers. My husband and I are both research-based people. I have a PhD and he does data analytics. So the hospital kind of talked to us about the research and asked us to, you know, consent for him to be in. And of course we did. And then we did some research of our own and kind of read up on it. And was like, okay, like this thing's actually going places and helping families. And like, maybe it'd be a good investment. At the time, Winston was on an NG tube and his medical team wanted to put a G tube into him. And my husband and I were like, absolutely not. We are not doing another surgery unless you absolutely can tell us why he needs it. Because he wasn't eating anything orally. And we were like, you haven't even let us try to take the tube out and see how he does, right? So they ended up agreeing to let us do a controlled structure wean. And during this process, I met another heart mom who goes to a different hospital, but she was also involved in the NPC stuff. And we kind of roguely weaned our kids off NG tubes together. And it has now been adopted in. And it's kind of like the common practice in terms of how a lot of hospitals do these like hunger-based controlled weans, which has been fantastic. But anyway, the connection to this other heart mom, as well as our team kind of introducing this stuff to us and us slowly accepting that this was, in fact, not a mistake, has kind of pushed us into becoming more involved in some different organizations.
Okay. We were similar. I mean, Mike ended up getting a G-tube in part because he had a fund application that was done because he had really bad reflux. So they put a G-tube in, but it was the same sort of deal. We had to kind of rogue wean going off of the stuff we could find on Facebook and the groups and the recommendations they had.
Yep. And I love our cardiologist. Like, our world goes like, God is here and cardiology is like right there. I trust everything she says, everything she does. I love her to death. But like this one, I was like, you got to trust us on this one. Yeah. So,
yeah, I don't know if it's, we were in a relatively smaller center, but what we found was for stuff like this, it was kind of a hot potato. Nobody wanted, like, his GI people didn't want to deal with it. His cardiac people didn't want to deal with it. And they would always point at each other, like, I can't do anything unless they say something.
It's always that pass the buck situation. Yeah, our cardiologist even said to us, she's like, look, we're really good at putting tubes in. We're not so good at getting them out. So they were pretty thankful, from my understanding, to it, just that we pushed. And now a lot more kids at their center are tube weaning as well than they ever did before. So, you know, it's 6+ years in the making at this point, but it's nice that they are able to take that information and take parents' feedback and actually make something of it, which is kind of, I feel like, unique in this like single ventricle heart community, because it's such a small subsect of people and kids that they really do a good job of listening to their families and listening to the parents and helping push for better outcomes now versus all the research, and then 20 years later, we're doing something about it. So,
yeah, it seems like more of a fast track to a lot of the things that really impact the lives of the parents and patients in a significant way that maybe was being overlooked by the medical professionals.
Right. I mean, until I feel like, unless they ever had a kid, like when Winston first went home from the hospital after his first surgery, the Norwood, 5-6 weeks old, he was on like 21 different doses of medication throughout the day, right? And like we would draw them all up and label them all and had a whole checklist. And we didn't know that we could kind of combine feeds and meds, right? Like the schedule that the hospital had us on when we left, we followed that to the minute. So I was waking up to feed at 2 a.m. and 2:30 for a med and 6 o'clock for a med, like to the minute. And we went back and they were like, you know, like that 2 o'clock feed and that 2:30 med could just be at the same time. I'm like, no one tells me these things. Like, that's something you should probably tell us, because we are literal. Like, whatever you say is the word. Like, we are doing it to a T, because we're all afraid we're going to kill our kids if we screw up.
Right. Exactly.
Quite literally.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. No, I remember the first time I got like 8 hours of sleep in a row.
Oh, God.
Micah was like close to one. And I remember waking up and I'm like, this is amazing. Like, this is so nice.
I remember the first time I got like 5 hours, because I also exclusively pumped for Winston for the first year. And I was like, 5 hours of sleep. I mean, I could climb Mount Everest. I had so much energy.
So you've got involvement in PCQ, I see, on the tube weaning. Is that your primary involvement with them now?
No, I don't even do anything with tube weaning with them, honestly, right now. I've kind of helped out more in parent connection things. So helping out with like parents that are coming up behind us. I would happily help out with tube weaning, but I feel like they've got pretty good handle and a pretty good parent board on that kind of stuff. So I've helped out more kind of in like our local center base with just getting either a parents to come or connecting with parents that are coming up in our shoes behind us and being like, hey, here's what worked. Here's what didn't work. Here's what to expect. Here's what they tell you, but here's what actually happens. So like that kind of thing. And then the other thing my husband and I have been doing too is we're just talking to other parents about insurance billing and like how to negotiate that, how to get hospitals to recode things. Like, we have a whole Excel file of like codes we know work for our insurance and codes that are similar. And like, how do you have the hospital recode it to a code that like, you know, has been paid on before, things like that. So not that that's directly through MPC or FON or anything, but just like in that like sense of like connecting parents with parents for the betterment of not only the heart kid, but also the family as a whole unit.
Yeah, that's insurance is always tricky, right? Because everybody is different and everybody's plan is slightly different. Yep. And we went through three different of the major insurance providers within the first year, just because I had gone through a job change. And then like within that job change, I had gone from one region to a different region, and the different regions use different providers. And then, of course, halfway through the year, my company got bought out. And so
She had to meet that deductible three times.
Yeah. So they were like, and it got to the point where the insurance companies were playing hot potato. Like, no, it's yours. They need
to. You're like, that bill day.
Like, I don't care. One of you has to pay it.
That's brutal. My husband took a new job in March of 21. So, like, of course, we met our max out of pocket after the Fontan surgery. And then we had to do it all over again. I was like, oh, yeah. Gosh.
Like,
I know. It's like, brutal.
So you're not as involved with NBC QIC right now as you or Fawn as you were?
Yeah, I'm not like on, I don't serve on a board or anything like that. I spoke at the last conference they had held in Chicago from a parenting night standpoint for the conference about like Fontan for parents. So a lot more focus on preparing not just providers for Fontan, but families for Fontan. Like how can providers better help prepare these families. So that's what I did at this last learning session that we had in Chicago. And from there, our team has kind of utilized that and really worked on building that parent-to-parent connection.
Okay, good deal. Where do you hope to go with that? Is it primarily within the Chicago area? Or are you hoping to sort of build a model to...
Yeah. So at the last NBC QIC, I know there was quite a few different like talks and presentations on the benefits that the parent-to-parent connections can have. And so I hope that centers across the board have taken this and are building that parent-to-parent connection for their patients, for their parents and families to help just connect out there, right? Like there's Facebook groups and things like that, but talking to a family that's slightly ahead of you at your own center and like, because every center has their little nuances, is just so beneficial in terms of making your life easier and making this whole process better predictable, right? When you know it's going to come at you, even if it's horrible, at least you can be better prepared for what that's going to look like and kind of plan out what things are going to do and how things are going to work. So me personally, I can be more involved if they ever call upon me or need me to do that. I'm happy to. My husband would kill me for saying that because he's like, stop agreeing. He's like, no is a full sentence. But at the same time, for me, it gives me so much. It gives me benefit, right? It's almost like a therapy for me to do this kind of stuff because I feel like if I'm out there helping other families and helping other parents just kind of get to that next step, it's a way I give back to my community, right? Because people came before me and paved that path, you know, for my kid to be here today. And so I hope that I can continue to help, you know, pave that path and make that path a little bit more beaten down for the parent that comes behind me.
Very good. So do you see yourself working on kind of similar projects in the long run, or are there other things going on right now in Fawn and NPC that you're excited about?
Yeah, so now that my child's past the interstage area, I've focused a little bit more on the Fawn outcomes and things like that, just because it's where my benefit would lie from if, you know, advances are made there, quite truthfully and honestly. I really appreciate that they've spun this off because one of my big complaints going through it was like, you are so heavily monitored from Norwood to Glenn, that first to second surgery. And even Glenn to Fontan, right? Like there is, it's a little bit more of a limbo because it's not so scheduled, but like it's still there. And then after Fontan, it's like, either you immediately don't have a successful Fontan and you wind up a transplant, okay? Or you have a very successful Fontan and then you are in this limbo of, are we making it 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years?
Yeah.
And what are we looking for, right? So I think a lot of the benefit for parents is that data and that understanding of what comes next and what can we expect and what are we looking for and what are the outcomes and what are other centers doing to support families, because having a dedicated single ventricle team at a center and then other centers don't is a vastly different way that are either supporting or not supporting these families.
Right. You know, it's interesting. We live in the Dallas area and there's two centers, you know, Cook Children's in Fort Worth and Dallas Children's. We were at Cook Children's. We love our hospital, but until this year, was this year? Yeah, I want to say it was this year, the beginning of this year, they didn't have a single ventricle clinic or anything like that. It wasn't like there was no Fontan clinic or anything. And so we ended up enrolling our child in the Dallas one because they had a clinic.
Yeah.
And so it's, that's a big difference, right? Like sometimes we refer to it as kind of like a honeymoon phase, like after the Fontan, especially if things have gone well, where you kind of just, you can forget about it.
If yes.
You want to.
If you can.
Yeah. You know, cause for us, he was doing so well. Like we just have aspirin. Like that's it.
That's my son. He's literally on an 81 milligram aspirin, which it shocks me, let alone other people in the world, that my kid is walking around a half a heart on like barely a blood thinner.
Yeah. Yeah. It's always funny when like we're running around or whatever. And I'm, you know, not bad for a kid with half a heart. You get that. Like, what?
I flew to California with my kids on a solo trip. I was, don't know what I was thinking, but I took all three of my kids on a 5-hour flight to California to see my sister over the summer. And I sat next to my youngest, and then across the aisle sat my two older kids, one of which was Winston. And Winston sits down on the plane next to this guy and looks at him. He goes, "Have you ever met a person with a half a heart?" And this guy looks at me like, "What the hell?" And I'm like, ugh. And the guy, Winston, goes, "Yeah, because I am one. I have a half of a heart." And I was like, I mean, he's not lying, but Winston, we also need to like announce to the whole world. Like, I'm glad you can advocate for yourself, but like, maybe not to the total random stranger on the plane next to you. The guy was like, "Is he going to be okay?" I'm like, "Yeah, he's going to be fine. Don't worry about him."
Yeah.
It's fun to scare people sometimes.
Yeah, it is. More on the personal side, or what kind of like personal goals do you have as far as the work you do, either with MPC, QIC, or FON, or outside of them?
When my son had his first birthday, we decided that he didn't need anything. And so in lieu of gifts, we asked for monetary donations to Lurie's. And we kind of put it in a separate fund within the Lurie's donation system so that we could then allocate the funds once we were done to what we wanted, right? So when we got the funds done, we contacted his cardiology team. We're like, "Look, we have thousands of dollars. Like, where do you want us to put this money for you?" And they're like, at Lurie's, it's a downtown Chicago hospital. They don't have their own parking garage, so parents have to pay for parking when they go down to the city.
Oh, that's brutal. Terrible. Because
brutal.
Chicago is like the worst.
Yeah, and there's a discounted parking garage, and there's like discounted options, but like the cheapest you're getting is like $5-$10, and then it's like another like 20-minute bus ride. Or if you want to park like right there, you can do it for like $15 a day at like your discounted rate, which still adds up if you're there for a year plus, as some of these families waiting transplants are. So they're like, "We want parking passes." So we ended up buying out parking passes that they could then use for families. And then every year since then, we've done the same. We started a foundation where we fundraise to buy parking passes for families every year. We obviously don't fund the entire cardiac floor of 44 beds at a constant rate, but you know, we do what we can to give back. So my goal outside of FON is to, you know, continue that, keep that growing. Sometimes it's challenging with three kids. As I said, I don't say no to things. So like, I just literally came from my kid's school where I was volunteering, and I also work, you know, so it's just all of these things that add up. But, you know, for me, like I said, giving back to that heart community gives me the most joy. It gives me a purpose. It gives me benefit. I really feel like I'm doing something good for that specific person, right? Like, and I love the organizations that are focusing on research and everything for like the big broad spectrum of good. But we focus on like making that one person's stay just that much easier.
So what's the name of the foundation?
Some assembly required. Which
<it.
laughs> heart parents get, and like other parents look at me like, "That's kind of disturbing." I'm like, "You got to be there to get it."
It's like, you don't understand. We laugh at this stuff.
Right. If you don't laugh, you'll cry, right? Yeah. So my kid was a, you know, little tyke's toy. It came out some assembly required. So that was always our joke. So we just kind of went with it.
And like, do you guys have like a website or?
Yeah. It's someassemblyrequiredccu.org.
someassemblyrequiredccu.org. Okay, cool. Yes. Cool.
Yeah. So it's my little side passion project. So like I said, we just do what we can with it.
I was going to say, do you have like an annual or regular fundraiser?
Yeah. So our big annual fundraiser, we run a Topgolf fundraiser. So it's like a fun event. And then we do like a bunch of live auctions and that kind of stuff. And then we do like trivia nights throughout the year. We did a beer tasting food event last February for like Heart Month awareness, that kind of thing. So we do like some smaller events around the areas throughout the years, but our big one is like a Topgolf fundraiser, which is, it's fun. It's family friendly. Everyone can come enjoy. So
awesome. I do love Topgolf. It's a pretty solid get together.
I love that place. It's a blast. And my 6-year-old, my heart kid is super into golf. And I'm like, great, this is the sport for you, kid, because let me tell you, you're not going to keep up with baseball forever here.
Yeah.
So he absolutely loves golf. So
good deal. Good deal. So there's a parent listening and they're like, okay, well, I'd like to get involved too. What would your recommendation be for them?
Yeah. I mean, I think the easiest way to get involved is talk to your nurses and your cardiologists. Like, they know all the organizations, they know the other families. Obviously, there's like HIPAA constraints involved with that. But what we have found that if they kind of get both parties' permission involved, they're able to do that. So talking to your team, they can point you to organizations that are local to your area, as well as national ones, but even just other parents, right? Just connecting with other parents is a good way to start, because sometimes going to those big conferences or alone is intimidating. And so if you know another parent going who, like, you, even if you've like just texted with them, chatted with them on social media, at least you can like sit with them and like not feel like this really out of place imposter syndrome type person. It's a nice way. So I think that by starting with just going to your care team and saying, hey, I want to get involved, hook me up with someone that's already involved, tell me where I can go to do that. They're a really good set of resources.
Okay, so I have a curveball question, and you don't have to answer it because I didn't put it on the thing, but
I'll give you an answer, don't worry.
So okay, the question is, so one of the things that inspired me to do this podcast was that I see on the regular, being a part of a lot of the Facebook groups, is that there are people who get the diagnosis in utero, right? And they see a cardiologist who maybe hasn't read up on the literature in the last 20 years. And they basically get told, you know, there's no hope. What would you say to a parent who was in those shoes?
It's hard, right? And I get that it's hard, and it's, hindsight's 2020, because having Winston as Winston, he's such a flipping fun kid. Like, everyone that meets him just like falls immediately in love with him. And I couldn't imagine my life without him. But at the same time, like I said, they rushed us into MFM, frankly, so we could beat the abortion deadline in case we wanted to. And we're well aware that that is why we were rushed into it, so that if there was something wrong, we could make that decision. So I never want to fault anyone for making that decision, right? Because it's your family, it's your choice. It's never easy. Nobody makes it to 20 weeks pregnant and then is like, never mind, I don't want to do this anymore. You know, it's a huge, huge decision. So I never want anyone to be faulted or scared or shamed in making that decision. But at the same time, there's so much hope. The internet is full of the doom and gloom and scary. And these providers that are seeing, you know, hundreds and thousands of MFM fetal monitoring cases a year, they're not the ones that are going to be the best bet, right? Talk to the single ventricle cardiologist, right? If you're on the fence and a random general cardiologist is telling you there's no hope, talk to a single ventricle cardiologist. See what the future could really look like. And it could be horrible, right? Like, I have been to more kids' funerals than I'd ever thought I'd ever go to. It's not something that anybody ever plans for or wants to do, but the life that those kids bring, even if it's days, weeks, months, years, is fantastically bright. So every family has their own choice to make, and it's scary and it's hard. And I never fault anybody for making whatever choice they choose. But if your sole reason is the doom and gloom of the internet, go talk to some people, because there's some serious light out there.
I like the answer. Good answer.
Thanks. For a curveball question, that was not so bad.
No, you nailed it. It was good.
There we go.
And then the last question, which I always ask, is if I find myself in your area, where do I have to go eat?
Ooh, so if you are in the city, there's a Maple and Ash is a super fun restaurant, pretty close to Lurie's-ish. And they have this menu where it's called I Don't Give a Fuck. And it is literally, the chef brings out like whatever kind of, and it's fantastic food, but it's like a menu pairing with wine, and it's kind of chef discretion for the night. It is fabulous. So it's a fun experience. Maple and Ash.
Maple and Ash, okay.
And there's also a little hole in the wall called Sushi O Sushi, which I haven't been to in years, so if it's not there anymore, I apologize. But it is all you can eat sushi, all you can drink sake bombs for 2 hours. Whoa. And if you're not doing sake bombs fast enough, they come up and encourage you to drink faster.
That's a dangerous, dangerous game.
So those are our fun hit-up places that are in the city here.
Okay, Maple and Ash and Sushi O...
Sushi O Sushi.
Sushi O Sushi, okay, yeah. Sweet. All right. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you very much for those recommendations. I'll go on the list. Well, good deal. Well, is there anything else you'd like to talk about? Stuff you're working on, stuff you've seen, stuff you're excited about?
No, not so much. I mean, I'm really hopeful for, honestly, our kids' futures. Looking even international research and what they're doing with stem cells nowadays, like I truly believe that our kid can hold out 10 years, we'll be using his bank stem cells and 3D printing him a heart and never having to worry about transplant drugs and things like that. So,
got my fingers crossed, HeartWorks is going to pull off what they want to pull off. And we're going to, 10 years from now, we're going to
see. I think that the future is real bright for these kids. I think science moves at an incredibly fast pace nowadays. And I think there's some pretty cool things coming down the pipework for our kids here.
Good deal. Well, thank you very much again, Lauren, for joining us on the show.
Really appreciate it. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Thank you, dear listener, for joining us again for this episode of Sharing the Hope from the Micah Mason Foundation and our conversation with Lauren Shubbs and her work with Fontan Outcomes Network and PCQIC and her own foundation in the Chicagoland area. If you'd like to find out more about Fontan Outcomes Network, head to the website fontanoutcomesnetwork.org or npcqic.org. And if you'd like to support the podcast, head on over to the Micah Mason Foundation and click on the donate button. Thank you for joining us again. I'm your host, Patrick Mason, and this has been Sharing the Hope.